fingers cross. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows.
Indeed. Welcome, everybody. No Dom today, but I am Colin here with you. And guys, I am someone who does not watch a ton of movies, or just haven't, throughout the course of my life, been a movie guy to speak of. I'm always, for whatever reason, just much more inclined to watch TV than virtually any movie. And I certainly have never done a podcast about a movie before, but all of that is changing today. Because lately I have actually been watching a ton of documentaries on Netflix and HBO Go and elsewhere, and really loving a lot of them. And I'm hoping that, for a while going forward now, I can podcast about quite a few of them, hopefully. And when I decided that this was something I wanted to do, I knew that there was only one place that in a perfect world I would be starting this series, and that would be talking about The King of Kong, one of my favorites, with one guest in particular who thankfully was willing to come on with me for it after 5 years away from the podcast. Welcome back to the show, Johnny Fairplay.
I have to say, I've always liked you more than Dom.
I have too.
5 years I've been waiting to tell you this.
Thank you so much. Fairplay, how have you been doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. And I don't mean I've gone on record on numerous occasions. You two, the podcast you did, running through the life and times of Johnny Fairplay during the course of Survivor Pro Islands, I think is the most amazing interview I've done about myself. The most thorough, the most just incredible. So thank you so much. That podcast still stands the test of time. It's almost up there with Survival of the Fairest, which you can catch every Wednesday wherever you listen to podcasts, featuring myself, Johnny Fairplay, and Matt Kuhn, and a previous Survivor sometimes and sometimes not, talking Survivor. So go to survivalofthefairest.com for that. But let's talk what we came to talk about.
I wouldn't expect anything less from you, by the way, on the opening intro. Sure.
Oh, well, actually, if you want to go to johnnyfairplay.com and order a t-shirt, with every t-shirt purchase, you get a phone call from me, Johnny Fairplay, and you can do your own podcast. It'll probably be a 10-minute podcast, but, you know, we'll go from there.
Yeah.
So let's talk King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. The subtitle is usually left out when describing this movie, and a lot of people don't think – Donkey Kong when they hear the title. You and I did we talk about it on the podcast?
So what happened is here's my origin story. Sure. On The King of Kong. Oh. Is I heard you recommend this movie on RHAP like 5 or 6 years ago and say that Billy Mitchell is one of the all-time great movie villains. I checked it out that night. I then watched it again the following day because I loved it that much. Like, I am totally with you. This is among my favorite documentaries of all time. But Fairplay, for the people who haven't seen the movie, and we won't be getting into spoilers right now. We will soon, for sure. But for the people who are just checking this podcast out and may want to check the movie out, which is in full on YouTube, just search King of Kong, Fistful of Quarters, and you can find it very easily. Fairplay, set up just the basic premise of this movie.
Sure. There is a I love him. I mean, it's hard for me to – there's a gentleman by the name of Billy Mitchell with amazing hair and an even more amazing smile. He may no doubt be the most hateable person ever walking the planet, and he has the high score on Donkey Kong, and there's a guy out in Redmond, Washington, that would like to beat that high score, and does his best to do so, and from there hilarity ensues.
Yes, for sure. And Fairplay, I know you're a big pinball guy, but are you a big just arcade video game player at all?
Sure. I'm actually going this weekend, where this Sunday I will be at Playthrough. Of course, why would I
why would we know where we're gonna be on Sunday?
Well, no, I'm just going. I'm going to play through gaming convention in Raleigh, North Carolina. It's the biggest gaming convention in North Carolina. It's once a year. It's February 17th through 18th, and they have video games, arcade games, tournaments, cosplay, all the stuff. And that's how into gaming I am, and arcades and pinball and all that stuff. So yeah, no, back in the day, I used to hit up the arcade. I remember the early days at the movie theaters playing Asteroids and Centipede, and then later going to the arcade and Skate or Die 720, Gauntlet, Ninja Turtles, WrestleFest, Matt Mania. Mania Challenge.
Yeah, the list goes on. It sounds like for sure. It's a big time sure. video Donkey game player.
Donkey Kong was never one of my absolute. I did play Donkey Kong back in the day, but it was never one of my absolute because I wasn't that great at it. And you know, as you learn from watching the documentary, there are tricks to the trade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they say the average Donkey Kong game, I think Billy Mitchell says, lasts like less than a minute or whatever.
That's not true.
Okay. someone else said like you're lucky to get to the third elevator board or whatever.
Yeah, well, I don't even think that's
fine. What are you good at? What's your Donkey Kong high score?
About Donkey Kong in the movie is not true, pretty much.
Oh, okay. What other facts do we need to check about the – is it really – actually considered like the number one most prestigious game to have the high score at, or is that also not true?
I would think so. I mean, because you're talking about it's the first ever appearance of Mario. In the legend of legends, I think Donkey Kong and Pac-Man are one and two. And I think this documentary bumps up this, if it was number two, to number one.
Okay. And Billy Mitchell, also the first person to play a perfect Pac-Man game. So I guess it's neither here nor there.
Obviously.
Prior. Yeah.
Yes. And Billy Mitchell, as you will learn watching the movie, he's controversial, kind of like the abortion issue. And if I had to compare Billy Mitchell to the abortion issue, I would.
That's exactly right. Had you heard of Billy Mitchell prior to seeing this movie, just being a video game enthusiast?
Oh God, no, no. And I had never heard of abortion prior to
sure. I think we are okay at this point. I think people have a clear enough idea of what would be in store for with this movie that we can start talking about what is actually what we actually see play out in this movie. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want to be spoiled, I would say now is the time to tune out. But fair play. Let's dive in. And the way that the movie starts is we're going to meet our two primary players, and we start by meeting Billy Mitchell, who, as far as I can tell, and maybe this is wrong too, it seems to me like has been more or less like the Michael Jordan, or maybe like Michael Phelps is a better example for video games, or he's like the one guy since like age 17 that really stands out. He was blowing everyone out at Donkey Kong ever since he was a teenager, and then plays the first game of Pac-Man, and he goes on to be the bad guy in this movie. What do you feel like it is about Billy Mitchell? Like, as someone yourself who has spent some time on screen doing some villainous things, what makes him such a larger-than-life villain, even in this documentary setting?
Getting back to that grin, it's just, like, he can't even grin like a normal person. It's just so creepy and just loathable. And then, you know, the feathered hair, you know, and like, it's not like this documentary was filmed, you know, 28 years ago.
Right.
It's like a 6-year-old documentary. And pulling back the curtain a little bit, one of the first movies I ever downloaded via torrent was like an illegal version of King of Kong. And the version that I got, like I barely got the ending, and I guess it was an early cut. The version that I saw always up until I rewatched last week for this podcast, I never knew what Billy Mitchell typed as his initials when he got a high score.
Oh wow, you didn't know that? Well, were you not paying close enough attention? You got to look at his ties, man.
No, yeah, but that was not in the original cut that
that's,
I had.
No, I'm just giving you a hard time because that's how he yes. frames it. He's like,
oh, I know. Yeah. Heaven forbid he actually fucking tell you.
Right. But I think that's part of it.
I would have guessed ass if I had to guess.
No, I feel like that's part of what makes Billy Mitchell so great is he can't just give you a straight answer. He can't just say, oh, I'm the only person who's ever made it to the kill screen that people have witnessed in public. He has to say, now that I think about it, I'm the only one. Or like, gee, I ought to try losing sometime. Like, you really can't draw this guy up any better, especially down to, as you mentioned, Fair Play. I really feel like his physical aesthetic really just puts him over the top where he has this, like, blow-dried power mullet and these like gaudy ties. I really feel like virtually every part of Billy Mitchell was left in roughly 1984.
Yes. Yes. I don't know if you've done any research on this. We learned throughout the documentary that Billy works for Ricky's Hot Sauce and he acts as though it's his own company. Why is it not Billy's Hot Sauce?
That's a fair question, but you are right. It definitely does present it as if he's like the one guy doing everything for this company. Like those are the terms it seems like he wants you to believe in. Like he's doing all the production and the sales and everything along in between stocking the shelves himself at the grocery store.
Are we doing a separate discussion on that or should this be visited now?
Go for it.
Okay, if you needed any reason to hate this guy, in addition to everything he presents on his own, he goes to supermarkets or grocery stores or whatever you call them in your area, and he moves the Texas Pete and moves the Tabasco or any of these name brand hot sauces you may be familiar with. He consolidates them into single rows so that Ricky's Hot Sauce, which is everyone's always first choice, is front and center and as wide as possible.
It's so strange. He's like moving all of the Frank's Red Hot like gallons onto the floor so he can put more Ricky's on.
Oh,
it's so strong.
I pray that this is, I mean, because I can imagine if this is not Billy Mitchell's company, that Ricky goes to the grocery store and is like, oh, God, Billy's been here. Look at this. This is embarrassing. And actually, Ricky puts the Tabasco back where it goes.
It reminds me, I saw a tweet from Dinesh D'Souza, like blatantly went to a bookstore and moved other books around to make it look like they had set up a big display for his new release. And like, it was very obvious from the photo that he had done it himself. It was very much in line with that. And they strike me as similar types. Fair Play. I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, of course, if you had seen this movie somehow, like if all of this had gone down in 2001 and you'd known about Billy Mitchell prior to being out there on Pearl Island, would you have tried to work some Billy Mitchell into that Fair Play persona for TV?
Oh, you would have got a confessional by the ocean in which I proclaimed that I was more controversial than the abortion issue. That's a given. And I would have done that, you know, maybe I need to try losing sometimes or like right. after voting out like Rupert, like, you know, I would have had like a coconut shell and pretended it was a telephone. It was like world record headquarters. So, yeah, all that would have been worked in. Absolutely. Like, you know how when I voted out people on Pearl, like I use a wrestler's catchphrase, I probably would have used Billy Mitchell-isms.
I really hope so. This guy really is, as we'll go on to see over the course of the movie, really just like I would imagine when they set out to make this documentary, I don't think they could have ever anticipated how much Billy Mitchell would deliver for them.
Oh, yeah. No. I would like to think that like they started the documentary, like they just want to do a documentary about Billy Mitchell and just paint this picture of what a great guy he is. And then like, you know, like day two, they're like, all right, stop production. we're going to have to switch directions here.
We're going to have to pivot.
Yeah, this is not fun. This guy, I saw him kick a baby earlier today. This is not going to work.
Well, when I tweeted out a while ago that we were going to do this podcast, we actually got a response from Matt Hoffman from Big Brother recommending another arcade documentary, Man vs. Snake, which I did watch. And Billy is in that, as is like Walter Day and a couple other people that we see in The King of Kong along the way. And in that movie, he's presented as it seems, would want you to like imagine him. It seems like it really is just like the well-regarded guy who is the all-time great, who's just there to support his friend in this time of, you know, trial and tribulation.
Well, Thunder D, the guy that did the Dead Grandma Lie with me, he went to Wizard World Comic Con in Portland, Oregon. I got him tickets, and Billy Mitchell was there. And he explained to Billy Mitchell who he was and that, you know, how much I loved Billy Mitchell, and asked if, you know, for like an autograph picture to that he could send to me. And, you know, Billy Mitchell held firm at like $45 for the picture of the hot sauce. What, like, there was no, he was getting that, well, he was hoping to get that 40, that it never happened. The $45 did not exchange hands. So, but he was not coming off a freebie. So, and then I had another friend, Jim Valley, who had interviewed Steve Wiebe for Seattle Radio, and he said Steve Wiebe was an asshole.
Well, that's the thing is, Steve Wiebe, we get this great quote from Billy Mitchell, who, after his introduction, says, if I'm doing so well, if every ball is bouncing in my favor, there's some poor bastard out there getting the screws put to him. And this is where we meet Steve Wiebe. And over the course of this movie, obviously, Steve is going to be like the hero and is a great foil to Billy Mitchell. I think, like, it's easy to look heroic next to Billy Mitchell. Yeah. But I do think Steve Wiebe is a very sympathetic guy, the way that this is presented. But at the same time, anyone who is that good at Donkey Kong, I would have a hard time imagining that they're great socially.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you see the social awkwardness of Steve Wiebe. So yeah, I'm wondering, I don't think it's as far as, you know, Asperger's or autistic, but it's creeping in those boundaries. He's a little different, and you know, as I said, I don't think I would, you know, I would medicate him.
I think he's obsessive, is how, like, his wife would probably describe him as OCD. Yeah, I think at one point.
I would imagine. What's Steve Wiebe's best friend that smokes the cigarettes throughout the documentary?
I forget his name, but he's great. He is like the no bullshit guy on the Steve Wiebe corner.
Oh, he's the best. He reminds me of Thunder D for me. Like, he's Steve Wiebe's hype man.
Right.
I could imagine him secretly fucking Steve Wiebe's wife and smoking cigarettes while he does it.
Oh no.
Yeah. What? You don't see it going down this way? Anyone that watches Survivor and listens to this podcast, Steve Wiebe's wife is very comparable to Chrissy from the last season of Survivor.
She is, although she does not strike me as the type who would be into Steve's friend.
No. Well, honestly, I think she – I don't know. She's got like a seductiveness to her I see her just like, God, I kind of want to pound her. But
to me, I feel like she's one of the true heroes of this movie, by the way. Like, if Steve Wiebe is being made to look like a hero, I feel like she's almost not getting enough credit for the amount of time she has to deal with two little kids running around the house while her husband's spending 10 hours in the garage playing Donkey Kong.
Oh yeah, yeah, and I think you learn by way of the daughter that life is not as great as it seems,
right.
You know, what's her quote, you know, some
about the Guinness Book of World Records, she says,
yeah,
don't people ruin their lives to get into that book?
Yeah, and I don't think that was an original thought by the daughter. I think she was quoting the mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and but by the way, not that I'm ever advocating for banging someone's wife, but if you're gonna bang someone's wife, make it the guy who's spending 10 hours at a time playing Donkey Kong.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because number one, he's distracted. And number two, he probably can't kick your ass.
Yeah. So
the benefits of fucking a married woman whose husband is vying for the Donkey Kong record.
I'm glad that we got you back on here. It's been 5 years since our last kind of takes like these. And I'm glad that we're getting that back out to the
which. Are these hot takes?
They may be. I haven't heard that terminology thrown around too much lately, but I think they may qualify.
I don't think the term hot takes was in existence 5 years ago. So
and now you can't go 30 minutes without hearing it. So congratulations,
yeah.
World.
I'm still not sure what I know for breakfast I had hot cakes. So I feel I'm a little bit here in the bubble. We're pretty good.
As someone who I would imagine was rooting for Billy the first time you were watching this movie, just to see him at least pretty regularly crush Steve's dreams for a little while, were you actively rooting against Steve Wiebe the first time you were watching it, or did you at least have some sort of sense of like, oh, at least this guy's working hard and is trying to accomplish this goal?
I was a person divided. I felt like I honestly had a split personality for 2 hours
It's like 80 minutes. It's pretty quick.
Yeah, an hour and 22 minutes. I felt that there was inner conflict that I couldn't control. Mm-hmm. So I loved every move that Steve Wiebe makes. Like there is a part of me that's a decent human being that's like, all right. And then when the hammer fist comes down to crush that each and every dream there is, the heel in me is just like, oh, this guy is so great. Like, right. I honestly would love to be Billy Mitchell's best friend, but I don't see him having friends.
I think that's not an inaccurate observation. And along similar lines, what was your take on Billy Mitchell's wife? Because that seemed quite superficial to me as well.
Oh, yeah. I think when the huge cardboard box arrived at his house from I think he opened it. The funds were checked off in the offshore account, and yeah. Everyone was happy. Yeah. So no, Billy Mitchell could have been on 90 Day Fiancé if this documentary hadn't worked out.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, the way the documentary presents it, Billy's got a lot of friends within the world of video gaming. And I would imagine, though, that's probably about it. And it's not like we see a deep exploration into Billy's personal life, but the way that he's and I also understand that this is not a documentary that's going to present him in many ways as good or successful at what he's trying to do. But it really does seem like just the way he carries himself almost ensures that he's not going to have that many friends in the real world.
Well, yeah, that and also the fact that the wife has never seen him play. Like, it's just, you know, you would think if they were close. I mean, she doesn't even know that much about him. And like that, I think that's, you know, once again, extremely telling that, you know, why would Billy Mitchell share his feelings or his hobbies or anything with the person he's married to from, you know, from the mail order company that he got her from?
Well, I think another all-star from this movie that may have something to do with why Billy is the way he is Billy's dad, who is hysterical in the couple of confessionals that his parents get. But it does feel like, from his dad in particular, that Billy could never do any kind of wrong. And I definitely get that sense from Billy as someone who feels that way about himself.
Yeah, and you know, Billy's whole mission statement in life or goal in life is awards and trophies. I mean, you know, he wants to be the best person at Pac-Man, the best person at Donkey Kong, the best person at what he also has Centipede and Donkey Kong Jr. has all these, you know, he collects trophies. Mm-hmm. So of course, why wouldn't his wife be a trophy wife?
Right. And I also think just the attention is another thing that he loves. And that's probably what motivates, as we'll get to. There's been some breaking developments as of like February 2018 about some of the stuff that we'll see in this documentary from a decade ago. But I would keep going back to about Billy is like, you were the man at this game for 25 years. This other guy comes along who is able to compete with you. I would think that most just normal people would be willing to say, okay, this guy can also play on my level. But it really does feel like, as we'll get to after Steve now at the beginning of the film records himself playing his own home version of Donkey Kong, like a legit Donkey Kong table or cabinet or whatever it's called, but just playing at his home instead of in front of a crowd, and he breaks Billy Mitchell's 875,000 point score. I would imagine a normal human being wouldn't feel the need to, as we now know, basically cook up these tapes to overtake that.
No.
it strikes me as like
set up there.
No. It just strikes me that like Billy would someone less I don't want to say like sociopathic than Billy, but someone less almost desperate for the attention that Billy seems to be, I don't know, would have gone to nearly these kind of lengths to stay relevant in the game that they were the god of for 25 years and are still going to be like immortalized within.
Yeah, no, I like it's there's definitely psychopathic tendencies there. So, but at the same time, I kind of feel that Billy, I think Billy's one of the greatest arcade players of all time. I think that he originally got these records and deserves these records. And there's been all these video games since then. Play some other fucking video games, people. Leave fucking Billy Mitchell alone. I think that's where he's at. And then, you know, when someone does, it's just like, look, 25 fucking years, this is number one. You got to come up out of nowhere. All right, well, then I'm going to doctor some fucking tapes to get the shit back because I haven't been playing in fucking 10 years.
Well, then, okay, to go back to the documentary I brought up before, Man vs. Snake, when that guy finds out that someone beat his record, he wants to get it back himself the right way. And I think that's the difference between Tim McVeigh was the guy's name, but not a good name after like 1992. No. Very bad name to have after the early 90s.
I would go by my middle name.
Yeah, at a certain point, you probably have to.
Adolf.
If you ever want to fly again, you're going to have...
His middle name is Adolf. What? The odds. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, Steve Wiebe, as mentioned in his garage, breaks Billy Mitchell's record that was set in 1982.
Oh, real quick, Colin. Sure. I like to refer to him as Steve Wiebe.
Yeah,
until
that's
the
right. Until we get to the end, for the first hour of this podcast, he's going to be Steve Wiebe.
Then I will eventually correct myself because I'll eventually care. But
right,
not
right.
Until then.
Right.
Or I will purposely do it to demean him because I do know and I do care and I don't like him because he's not my friend.
Right. I think that was part of what was going on. It became like a trope throughout the movie is people calling him Steve Wiebe when they were not on his side. And then at the end, Walter finally corrects himself and introduces him as Wiebe. It's great. It's very, very touching and sentimental.
No, Steve Sanders corrects Walter.
Oh, is it Steve Sanders who corrects him?
Yeah, Steve Sanders is the only what appears to be decent human being in the whole fucking thing.
Which is weird, considering he lied about getting 3.6 million points in Donkey Kong in 1982 and then couldn't crack like 200,000 when they actually had to go out and play at the Twin Galaxies arcade or wherever that Life or Time magazine photo shoot was.
Well, the first was New York. So I think that was just a normal arcade. Not a fancied, revered, namesake arcade.
The way he framed that, though, it made it sound like that was the first score he lied about, and now he's gone on to become a lawyer and is a Billy Mitchell.
Yeah, well, he did say the first score he lied, like, as in there were others.
Right, right.
That's the fact.
And this is the redeemable guy, is what you're saying. He is the sympathetic guy.
Only sympathetic and I think legit likable guy in the entire thing is the guy who professes to lie on a regular basis.
Right. At least he's open about it. Yeah. Steve breaks Billy's score that was set all the way back then. He submits the tape to Twin Galaxies, but they are not too receptive for this. They won't verify his score. Not only that, they essentially like barge into his house to check his machine.
Previous to that, we discover where the tapes are sent to be reviewed.
To Robert Mirzak, right?
Yes. A gentleman that has a 1 5-pound weight thing that he uses as a masturbating tool, I believe. And
yeah, I got to keep the wrists strong.
Yes, yes. I saw when they walked through his house/apartment, whatever it is, I don't even know it at this point. I could just imagine like thousands of things I would not touch.
Right. You can smell it when you see his apartment.
Oh, there. I mean, like if you ever met someone that you're pretty positive is a professional masturbator, this guy. This guy, if there's a checklist, he's got one in every box.
yeah, and he's going to be one of the more prominent figures in kind of casting suspicion on Steve's score here, and it becomes, at least the way it's presented, as almost like this inside job to make sure that Steve cannot overtake Billy. And I want to go back to actually something you said, because it does seem like a lot of that is based on this guy's had the record forever. No one's ever touched it. He probably never thought he had to be worried about anyone ever overtaking it because we have now Johnny Fairplay, all of these new video games that it seems like at least the kids these days are far more drawn to than the arcade games. But to quickly sidebar off of the plot of this movie, what do you think it is that draws people to these arcade games still, even when they have like Call of Duty or whatever else they could be playing?
There's the nostalgia factor. It's like, I mean, across the world, I mean, I was about to say across the United States, but all over the world, barcades are popping up everywhere, and they're generating a ton of money. And, you know, you have the two-player Jurassic Park and some other, you know, cool new games. But you, right beside that, you'll see a Donkey Kong, you'll see a Galaga, you'll see a Miss Pac-Man. And, I mean, you know, they just stand the test of time. I mean, but, like, you know, when I go, I play them all. I don't go with one quarter. I go, ooh, which one's it going to be? You know, I go with 20 bucks, and I'm just like, you know, I'm gonna try to put up a Galaga high score. You know, maybe beat my daughter who's 10 at a game of Centipede, so I feel good about myself. and then I'm gonna check out whatever the latest pinball is.
What's your go-to arcade game? What's your best game? Galaga is your best game.
It's up there. Yeah, I'm pretty strong Galaga. I'm a pinball guy first and foremost. So like I'm gonna hit up. If they have a pin bot, I'm going to throw some quarters. That's my go-to old school is pin bot's my favorite. And then like any of the new, like the new Star Wars Stern is awesome. The Metallica, the AC/DC, anything by Jersey Jack Pinball. They have a Wizard of Oz that is one of my favorites and a Lord of the Rings. It's really cool. And those are made, like a local company, Jersey Jack. So, yeah, that's my current go-tos.
Is there a Donkey Kong of pinball, like the one pinball machine that everyone wants the high score on?
I mean, people like the Playboy pinball. Mm-hmm. I mean, that because like when it goes through the things, it goes rrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr Playball, and my parents got me – they had a chance to get the Playboy, but the dealer also had a Star Trek, which was worth more and had a higher potential for resale value in the future. So they made the executive decision of getting me the Star Trek instead, which was fucking wrong. Not the fucking Star Trek was not cool in 1990, in case you're fucking wondering. We didn't have J.J. Abrams back then to fucking make it cool. Yeah, that shit sucked. So Adam's Family is considered a top table.
Mm-hmm. That's when I asked the question. The one that I think it may just be biased because that's the one I remember them having at like the movie theater that everyone wanted to play on was the Addams Family one was great.
Yeah, that's still considered a top table by most. So I'm guessing that might be there. I mean, like, but if you're gonna go a little more old school, I think Pinbot is gonna be in a lot of people's at least top 10 list.
Can you pause Pinball? Like, as Brian Koo was going around telling people, "Hey, Donkey Kong Kill Screen coming up." Are these games people can pause?
What, Pinball?
Pinball or whatever, or any arcade game. Is there a pause function on any of these?
Well, I mean, there's pause in the fact that if you hold the ball, like, I mean, like if you're you know, in between balls, like, you know, before you launch.
Oh, okay.
There's pause there, or you can hold the flipper if it's in that rest position there. And then on, say, like Donkey Kong, I would imagine there could be a spot like underneath a ladder where you could say, I mean, like someone like Steve Wiebe who does the diagrams on the monitor and stuff. You know, I'm sure there's certain levels that have a safe spot, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but, yeah, because like in Man vs. Snake, they would just have to keep losing lives if they wanted to take a break.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. So I wish I have a 9 month old. She'll be nine. Well, she's 8 months old. She'll be nine months old this weekend, and I have a 10 year old. So I did not get a chance to squeeze in Man vs. Snake.
Oh, because, don't sweat it.
This is a King of Kong pod. No, not
fair enough. I thought you may have already seen it before. I didn't expect you to watch it.
I rewatched King of Kong last week, and I had some friends over, and I looked to see if it was on Netflix, and it was. But like, I have Netflix, Amazon, and Hulu, and it wasn't available on any of those.
Oh, Man vs. King of Kong isn't, but Man vs. Snake is on Netflix.
Yeah, I know. When I did the search, that popped up. I was like, ooh. And I was like, should I just watch this instead? I'm like, no, I need to watch King of Kong. But I was happy because I found out what Billy Mitchell's three initials are for when he gets the high score.
That's wild that you never knew that before. It should go without saying.
I know it should, but it was not in that. I said I got a very early. I mean, think about it. That was one of the first torrents. I mean, like we're talking after LimeWire. But still, like, you know, like the beginning of the Pirate Bay, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is the only thing more pretentious than putting USA as your initials is insisting that everyone should automatically know you would put USA as your initials.
Yes. Pointing to your tie arrogantly and giving the most wonderful smile / creepy smirk.
Yeah.
How bad is his fucking smile? I mean, can we address this?
Well, that's the thing. It's not like you would think of like a typical, like, to throw shade on Dom and the rest of England, like a British kind of crooked smile. It's just like the front teeth are slightly off and in the like this very rat or like rodent at rodential way, if that's a word.
Sure. It is today.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's like
Yeah, it's very odd and striking, and it really gets the job done if you're trying to paint him as a villain.
it does get the job. I mean, because like you know, I do the Cheshire Cat smile, like you know, like when I vote people out in Survivor, and I embrace it, and you know, and going back and looking, I'm just like, hey, you know, that sure it's arrogant, but it's kind of cute. There's nothing cute about the Billy Mitchell. Ugh. I mean, like if it had a sound effect with the smile, it would say. Ugh.
That is exactly spot on. Yeah, it is the weird. The weirdest kind of attempt at looking nice to another person. Yeah, and Billy, not only like does he have great smiles and great reactions, like he's also great for. It sounds like he's great at delivering what I think he thinks are going to be like really memorable sound bites and trying to frame things in really prolific ways. And a great instance of that is when. He says after hearing news that this guy has broken his record on a on a videotape, he says the worst thing that can happen is to give someone credit for a score who doesn't deserve it. But even worse than that would be to deny someone credit when they do deserve it. And as I mentioned a little while ago, breaking news as of a couple of weeks ago, maybe a week or so ago at this point, the way this goes down is Steve Wiebe does break his score and Billy Mitchell won't give him credit for it. And then Billy Mitchell fakes a score, we have recently learned. This tape that he submits after, I believe when they're all at Fun Spot or down in Hollywood, when they're all at Fun Spot, Billy submits his million point tape. It has come to light very recently, Fair Play, and hopefully you know a bit more about this than I do, the term I keep hearing is MAME footage rather than actual gameplay. Can you explain what that means and what Billy did?
I'm under the impression that MAME – is it MAME – all right. If you have an arcade game at home, you have like, you know, a stand up single arcade like a Donkey Kong or a Galaga or something like that. If you have one of the arcade systems, it's like a 101 system or a 61. Aren't those considered like the MAME systems?
They may be. Yeah. As far as I feel like I've just heard MAME as like an emulator, like not the actual.
Yeah. A MAME is, as I said, it's like a 60-in-1 system or a 100-in-1 system. And it's not the 100% pure version of the game.
Mm-hmm. And so what's gone on with did he edit these together or like splice tape together or just Photoshop the scores or what? How did he pull this off such that no one called this into question until 11 years later?
Well, I mean, like if you watch King of Kong, you see the flying or the static on the side of the screen. I thought it was pretty obvious they pieced it together, but I don't even know if that's really what's in question here. I think what's in question is they only accept games from true arcade like boards.
Oh, okay. Because the way I've been hearing it framed is. that MAME footage was put in. So it made me feel like most of it was legit, but he would put in MAME footage in certain spots or whatever. But you're right that in the movie, we see them watching the tape for the first time, all these official judges watching it, and they notice...
And not Steve Wiebe.
No, not Steve Wiebe. He was, I think, playing on a Donkey Kong, trying to break this record at the time.
He was trying to break the record right. Live in front of people like a right. Legit fucking human being instead of watching a fucking video for... 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Then he's told at the conclusion of the video when his score is beaten, he's like, "Hey, Brian Koo, one time showing."
This was a one play tape, one of those one plays that doesn't work after you've played it once.
Even though it's your fucking record that was broken. That's
right.
Just
well, on the tape we can see this very weird looking footage that you would and scores jumping from one frame to the next. Like you would think. That these people
and the high score does not have like it doesn't say like 1 million. It supposedly it doesn't go to 1 million.
Right, it goes to all zeros and then goes back
all
around.
All zeros. Yeah, it's where we're at with Billy.
Does it on the if you actually hit a million, does it go up to 1 million or does it go? I feel like it still goes all zeros even on a legit machine.
Yeah, I think on both, but of course you know. On either screen, like when we go from 999,000 on Billy Mitchell's tape to the all zeros, which is supposedly a million, but to the all zeros, we don't. That's when they have the skip in the tape. It could have skipped at any time, but no. The second it goes from all nines to zeros, unfortunately, we don't get the one in front because it is a million, and that's just how the game is set up. But no, just at that exact moment, then we get fucking a skip in the tape or a blur to the left side of the screen.
Yeah, it's truly remarkable that this was something like we'll see. They immediately went in and put Steve's score into the all-time high score when he got it at Fun Spot, and then immediately upon playing this tape that Billy had sent along with the adorable old lady Doris, the Q-Bert player,
doesn't trust Billy Mitchell as far as she can throw it.
Well, he's given her free Q-Bert machines, so what are you gonna do? I guess
you would think she would say nicer things, and she basically says, "Yeah, he's fucking shady."
Right. You can see like when he brings her the machine, and he's like, "All right, you're no taking it back now. You're gonna go get that high score." You can see him just thinking like, "All right, that's nice, dear. Get the fuck out of my house."
Yeah, and do the only thing I really fucking care about you doing, and I'm gonna be so lovable when they have you bring it. And she's like, "Yeah, I'm sure she was outside smoking a cigarette, and they're just like, "Hey," or you know, Brian Koo is just like, "Yeah, Billy said you were," just, "Oh yeah, here, I could give a fuck less. I got my Q-Bert and I got my smokes. I'm good."
I feel like Billy showing up with that Q-Bert machine is a great just kind of snapshot of what makes Billy so great as a villain, where he stands there with like giving the thumbs up, like his chest puffed out. Like I think that is really what drives him as such a great kind of antagonist over this whole 82 minutes.
Yeah, and I would not be shocked if that was a loner.
It wouldn't surprise me at all now that you mentioned
I would bet dollars to donuts. So like that wasn't a gift as in, you know, here, this is yours. It's hey, you could like we're filming this, number one, bitch. And number two, I'll be back in 90 days per this contract to pick this up.
Yeah, I suspect that is probably true. It sounds like, they mentioned a couple of times that no one from Twin Galaxies ever makes money from doing that. I would imagine there are not a lot of sponsorship opportunities, even if you are Billy Mitchell within the world of video games, unless I'm mistaken. It doesn't seem like they can even get people to put their quarters in for them.
I would say Billy Mitchell has some sponsorship stuff out there. He's got trade. I've been trying to look over the last few minutes. I have a Billy Mitchell trading card.
Oh, wow. Yeah. From what year?
If I could, of course, it's been on my desk for like the past like 2 years, and then I actually cleaned my desk for the first time.
The one day you finally need it, it comes in handy, and it's nowhere to be found. But it does seem like they showed footage of Billy doing like a Spike TV show back in like 2001 or whatever, or back when he got the Pac-Man record, which I'm not sure what year that was, but it seemed like well after his teenage years playing a lot of Donkey Kong. You are right that if anyone could, I'm sure it is Billy Mitchell getting sponsorship opportunities, because it does seem like he's been able to be video, you know, classic arcade gaming's primary guy as far as the media is concerned, all the way up until the making of this documentary, essentially, from like 1982 to 2007.
Yeah, so I mean, I still get it's you know, it's 2018. I still get sponsorship dollars today. So mm-hmm. I mean, I would like to think that Billy Mitchell, who had a fucking documentary made about the man, is getting some sponsorship coin. I mean, he's doing Wizard World Comic Con. I would imagine that there's a sponsor on the at his booth.
Yeah, you may be right, that's why I said Michael Phelps earlier instead of potentially Michael Jordan, because I feel like he might be Billy Mitchell might be like literally the one swimmer you've ever heard of is Michael Phelps of the modern era, like I guess Mark Spitz back in the day or whatever, but like Michael Phelps is so far and away the clear number one, and I feel like that was the best analogy I could come up with for what Billy Mitchell was for so long within the video game world. Does that sound roughly right to you? Was there anyone else who was ever a 1A as far as name recognition goes for towards Billy, you know, second to Billy Mitchell?
I'm sure there's plenty of people that wish that Billy Mitchell is the Greg Louganis of
Wasn't he a diver? Is he a diver?
Yes.
All right, not a swimmer. Thank you.
Yeah. No. Michael Phelps is a swimmer. Yeah. No. I think your Michael Phelps analogy is
okay. Thank you. I just wanted some validation for that because I'm like Billy Mitchell and I just need everyone to think that I'm a genius at all times. But one thing actually that I thought you were going to bring up was in talking about the tape with all the glitches on it. One thing I noticed is it really felt to me, and maybe this is just like bias now that I know how all of this turned out a decade later, it felt to me at several times watching this documentary back like the producers knew Billy was lying about this videotaped score from the get-go. And a couple of things that I thought were just so odd now knowing the details that we've heard about in the last couple of weeks was allegedly, like, the primary co-conspirator who had allegedly witnessed all of these high scores, these million-point games that Billy has had now taken off of the record books, was Todd Rogers. And in the documentary, for seemingly no reason, because Todd Rogers isn't even able to come to the phone, they leave in a clip of Billy, as the tape is about to get played, asking to talk privately to Todd Rogers right before it gets played. And then also during the incredible montage playing the Everybody Knows song, the line "Everybody knows the captain lied," they amp up the volume for just that one line and zoom right in on Billy. It really feels like they knew back then that this was what was going on.
I'm not shocked.
Yeah, I don't know that they wanted to make any kind of like overt allegations against him to that extent, but certainly the subtext is there in watching this back now again. Although I don't know if I would have come to that same conclusion if I didn't find out last week that he was actually cheating on this tape. But I want to dive in.
I think it's one of those deals. I would rather if I'm making the movie and you know, and I do love Billy Mitchell, I let Billy dig his own grave. I don't need to dig it for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's probably a good strategy. He's certainly someone who
put the shovel in Billy's hand.
Right. It's the same way. Did you watch The Jinx on HBO? I feel like they took a similar approach with Robert Durst.
Very, very, very much so. Yep.
Oh, the burping. Oh, Billy. Yeah. Well, how for now, at least, Billy's first million-point Donkey Kong score in the documentary is going to count, and Steve Wiebe is devastated. Fair play. Were you happy to watch this guy, like, in tears and have his dreams ruined, or did you take it that far even back years ago, or were you still somewhat rooting for him?
I was conflicted. I was rooting for Steve. You know, it's if he just epically fails trying to beat the high score, it's a shitty movie. So you know, I like the highs and lows. So him getting the score and then you know, and then it's like, oh, and the evil Billy Mitchell's getting. I'm like, yeah, there we go. I can live with this.
Right. It's especially as you flagged up earlier, like it's just so great on one hand and just absolutely like heart wrenching. Like, wouldn't wish this on anyone. That what happened to Steve Wiebe, of like goes 3,000 miles across the country because all he hears about is how you have to do it live for it to count. Does it live, and then moments later they count a taped score from Billy Mitchell to overtake it after he thinks he got the world record. Is just like as brutal of a Donkey Kong trajectory as I feel like you could possibly draw up.
Yeah, and also like you know when Steve Wiebe's heading towards the kill screen and all the games he's playing against Brian Koo, which, you know, if you're going for a high score, I would think you want to play against someone because that gives you a break, mm-hmm. you know, like instead of just nonstop, you know, there is that. To whatever degree, pause in action, you know, to, you know, move your wrist, you know, walk around, you know, whatever. And, but when you watch Steve Wiebe play, like Brian Koo is setting his drink on top of the fucking machine. And I'm just like, motherfucker. I mean, like, as much as I love Billy Mitchell, I loathe his fucking minions, including Walter Day, every fucking one of them. They're purposely saying Steve Wiebe to get in his fucking head. And they're purposely like putting drinks on top of the, like,
they come talk to him.
He's going for a fucking kill screen. Don't put your in the middle of his fucking game. Don't put your drink on top of his fucking machine.
Yeah, and then not only just putting the drink on the machine, but like they will come over and talk to him. Brian Koo is trying to rally as many people as he can to go watch behind the guy's back as he's about to hit this kill screen, which I suppose.
Yeah, and Brian Koo, I think I think on one hand, he's just like, oh man, this is fucking cool as fuck. It's a kill screen. I'll never do it myself, even though I say I will one day. And also, he's like, I want this motherfucker to fuck up, and I want to be responsible for him fucking up.
Right, right. He's like, I want Billy to know that I had a hand in making this happen. And I also do think he had some kind of delusions that he himself would be the first to hit that kill screen. But again, this is not a documentary that's going to paint Brian Koo in a sympathetic light, but it really seemed like he was, you know, as much as he wanted to describe himself as a serious contender or the prodigy or whatever, his high score, as far as I've ever seen, is like 500,000.
Yes, yes. He sucked. Fuck Brian Koo. I mean, honestly, like I went to E3, I'm trying to think what year, 2001. I had a friend that worked at Sony, and he got me and another friend of mine passes at for E3. And I mean, I'm 5'8". God, I was probably like 120 pounds then. I'm like 165 now. But it was just nothing but nerds. I mean, just straight up nerds, like scared of their own shadows. My plan originally was to go in with a pair of scissors, and I was going to cut off ponytails and then wear them on my shoulder like Wookiee scalps, like Boba Fett. So, but that was the original plan.
That is not a good plan.
No, because the guy I was with is this military guy that loves to fight. I mean, it would have been ideal.
Oh, okay, okay.
So yeah, I'm not stupid. But we would walk. I mean, like, you know, they're like all the games are all these lines, and we would just walk up. We're like, and we go, hey, I'm playing, and we would move people out of the way and actually play. And oh my God, I wish that Brian Koo had been there and popped off in any way to have seen my friend just wreck Brian Koo in front of me.
he has such a good line as Steve is approaching the kill screen. It's like a confessional on Brian about like, yep, we have a kill screen coming up. First potential fun spot kill screen. I thought maybe I would get to do it, but you never know. Maybe he'll totally choke here in these last few levels. Anything could happen in Donkey Kong. Like, it's so clear what this guy's agenda is. And then as it happens, it zooms right in on Brian Koo, who's just like speechless and looking around, knowing that it's never going to be him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So no, just, I mean, easily. I mean, as I said, like, for everything I love about Billy Mitchell, I hate about Brian Koo. I mean, like, you know, the pesky sidekick, fuck that, like, you know, be the man.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the thing, is Billy Mitchell, it seems, the way he comes across in the documentary, like, he has to be aware of the way he comes across to some extent and is leaning into it. And with Brian Koo, it just seems like 24/7 bitch assness.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, Steve, it surprised me very much that Steve, after the 3 days at Fun Spot, was not able to get a new high score. I thought that was for sure where this movie was going. But
we do know that's a tricky Donkey Kong.
True.
There's phantom barrels occasionally and some other stuff.
Well, so. can you get into, because that confused me a bit. The idea of just like variance and randomness in Donkey Kong. Are there certain games like you'll just get bad luck where there's literally nothing you could have done?
There was an entire movie made. Was the one the movie with the glitch? Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, so I didn't see it. Yeah, I don't have a young daughter.
Okay, well, that's the only reason you would have had to have seen that movie. So some games have a glitch.
Okay. I
think it's on record that the Fun Spot Donkey Kong is known for phantom barrels and an occasional glitch. So, and I would imagine if you're playing for 2.5 hours, if that glitch is there, it's gonna rear itself.
Right. That's what I was wondering. Is it seemed like when Brian Koo was reporting all of Steve's scores back to to Billy Mitchell, and like that was one of the best parts of the whole movie. It's like all of these constant phone calls to Billy Mitchell, who of course would never show up anywhere himself.
Oh,
like
forbid.
Right, yeah, yeah, even and, when it's and, in his and hometown.
Mitchell, and Billy Mitchell asking for it is just like, hey, put Brian. So he's like, you wouldn't believe this, but he's right in the middle of a so and so.
Right, right. Well, he was listening. He's like, yeah, he went 780, then 825, and then 720. Like, it seems to me like all of the scores we're hearing about aren't. It's never like he's dying halfway through the game because he just got an unlucky barrel. But maybe they're editing that out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
A cabinet known for, you know, it's haunted. It's known for the occasional glitch. You know, maybe that glitch never presents itself. But if you're playing a game for 2+ hours, if there is a possibility, the likelihood of a glitch showing up will be in a 2-hour game versus a 3-minute game.
Of course, yeah, yeah. Well, at Fun Spot, as time is elapsing, he is not able to overtake that taped score. Steve goes back to Washington. It seems pretty demoralized. Billy is still, you know, he got to be the world record holder for about, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 hours before Walter went and put Billy's score in on the Walter's putting his score into the internet right now. That was one of the funniest lines of the movie. But
and for anyone that hasn't seen this, that's just listening to the podcast. So Steve Wiebe goes back to Seattle and kills himself. That's a shocking ending.
Yeah.
And then we find out that Billy Mitchell has been using fake scores.
Right. Yeah. It's horrifying. It's truly tragic. I can't wait for the follow-up documentary. Yeah.
Well, in King of Kong 2, Electric Boogaloo, his son with the shitty diaper or shitty ass from not being wiped comes back to avenge Billy Mitchell.
That's so. Right. That's right. Yeah. Derek, little Derek comes after all little those times spent on the drums. He's going to now.
And how pathetic is that? That like Steve Wiebe can't even buy an adult sized drum kit.
Well, the kid's 5 years old.
Well, no, but you can tell that Steve Wiebe would like to have his own drum.
Oh, sure, yeah. That's true. That's definitely true. He's playing the little mini kit, yeah.
I mean, like, his wife's just like, look, I gave you a choice. You could have the Donkey Kong or fucking drums. You don't get both. I don't want you that happy. Look at me. I'm fucking miserable. I'm in a sexless marriage. I can only fuck your friend that smokes so much. I have fucking asthma.
Oh, no. I have secondhand cancer from all of his cigarettes. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
you don't even know the burn holes on my ass from where he puts them out.
Bad times. Maybe he had to choose between the piano and drums, or maybe his wife said, you're getting a piano and not drums. Yeah.
But he does like drawing pictures of Darth Vader that are not that good.
It was okay. It was much better than I could do. It wasn't bad.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not a fucking artist. So yeah, he does draw pictures of Darth Vader better than me, but not better than any other artist I've ever fucking seen ever.
Right. I would say it's a lot like his piano ability. He's great on the piano, but not nearly as good as any professional pianist I've ever heard.
You said penis. Oh,
I did. Oh, man, okay. That's embarrassing. You haven't said anything out of line this whole podcast. So, no.
I'm glad this is suitable for work.
Well, he's back in Washington playing the piano, and he
playing
is
Darth, drawing Darth Maul.
trying to draw Darth Maul, apparently. And he finds out through the grapevine that the Guinness Book of World Records is calling Twin Galaxies, saying they want to include some video game scores into their 2007 edition. And if Steve wants to, the deadline isn't until April 20th. They're going to have a tournament in Billy Mitchell's hometown, Hollywood, Florida, where a big contest will go on for people trying to break these new records before they go into the record book. Steve brings the entire family down to Hollywood to finally go head-to-head against Billy Mitchell, right?
Yes, and Mr. Awesome will not participate in any way to assist in this.
I've been wanting to bring this guy up because he is another one of the highlights in the movie. This is one of the parts where Steve says, "Hey, Mr. Awesome, aka Roy Schilt, maybe don't come with
course,
me this
of
time."
Of course, this scumbag has the last name Schilt.
Well, this guy who is, it seems like to me, the version of Billy Mitchell that never was nearly as successful. Like, he thinks in his own, what was the commander? What was the name of the game that
Mr. Awesome.
No. The game that he got, Missile Command.
Missile Command. For anyone that hasn't seen it, he is the Uncle Rico of Billy Mitchell.
Yes, exactly. Where he is this guy who, in his own mind, set this world record that should have gotten him spots on late night shows and a lot of fame and women.
brings up Missile Command right. when talking about your favorite game.
Sure. And he, after not getting that and being, as it's presented to us, just kind of jealous of all of the accolades Billy has gotten, really seems to have it out for Walter Day and the Twin Galaxies nerd herd over these years.
And especially Billy Mitchell.
Right.
And I'm thinking this is a little bit of penis envy, because there is a picture of Mr. Awesome naked in which the girl's wrist covers up where his penis would be.
Right. It's not even her wrist going lengthwise. It's her wrist going widthwise.
Yes. So and she's not a big girl. I mean, Mr. Awesome was not a chubby chaser in his prime. This is a very thin young gal whose tiny wrist covers easily his entire penis.
Yeah, and there's a lot of controversy early because he is the one who bought Steve his new Donkey Kong board that he needed to potentially take down Billy, and Twin Galaxies feels like the only reason Steve is even playing is to humiliate Billy. Like, as they would have you believe, it's like they're only out to go after this one guy rather than Steve actually wanting to do something for himself, and they feel that
I think it's a little more the way Twin Galaxies sees it as depicted in the film, but I don't think it's 100% that's the reason he's doing it.
That there was more to it along the lines of, like, we need to take Billy down.
Because I think it's pretty obvious that Steve Wiebe and Roy did plenty of communication.
Yeah.
And we know Roy's agenda.
Right. And it is clear that it's something of an issue for Steve having to say, "Hey, Roy, don't come to Florida. I got to do this by myself." Like, I think you're probably right that there was a lot more going on between Steve and Roy than was ever made explicit in the movie.
Yeah, because Roy, you know exactly how Roy feels. You know how Twin Galaxies feels about Roy. Like Steve Wiebe in the documentary isn't painted with that same brush. But as I said, like, with the limited data that we have of the communication between Steve Wiebe and Mr. Awesome, that they talked more than three times.
Oh, for sure. But the thing, as far as, like, I'm
but
positive
Steve Wiebe
right.
does need this in his life. I mean, his life sucks. I mean, his dad threw out his arm.
He's open about that. He says at the beginning, like, I got into Donkey Kong because I got laid off from work and I needed some kind of purpose in my life.
Yeah, he wanted to be a Boeing. I don't know. Did he want to be a Boeing lifer?
His dad wanted him to be one at the very least.
That couldn't even happen.
Yeah. Well, Steve is going to now go try to attempt this Guinness World Record down in Florida. Roy Schilt not going to be coming with him. Before we get to that, though, I just wanted to ask you a little bit about, now that these people have seen Steve Wiebe, as far as they're concerned, play Donkey Kong, like they'd heard about
we're about 5 minutes away from him becoming Steve Wiebe.
Right, yeah. Well, having seen him at Funspot with their own two eyes, put up over 900,000 points on what is, you know, as we talked about, like the consensus is that's a demonic Donkey Kong machine that's much harder, or at least marginally harder than most others. How are they still not believing in Steve Wiebe? Or is it just they at this point they believe that he's legit and they just don't want to see Billy's record shattered?
I think it's that. So, and also, I think if this documentary had come out prior to the Guinness Book of World Records choosing Twin Galaxies, I'm guessing they would not have chosen Twin Galaxies.
That's probably pretty fair. Like it does. That's another one that I've wondered.
If you subtract like the last 3 minutes of the movie, I think Guinness says you guys are shady as all get out.
Right. That's honestly like the conclusion that I felt like I had no choice but to come to after seeing at Funspot them just immediately say, okay, Billy Mitchell's number one. It went after he sends in that tape. It doesn't matter to me if the guy's been the reigning number one since 1982. When you just watch Steve Wiebe or Wiebe with your own two eyes 10 minutes ago put up 900,000 points, how can you possibly take this tape? And especially when I didn't notice it at all the first couple of times I watched the movie, but it stood out to me the most recent time. Billy Mitchell, when he's giving Doris the tape, says to her, "This is a score they've been wanting to see for a long time, and it's time that I finally let that happen." It sounds to me like this is a score he'd been talking up to them for a while and only wanted to submit once he found, you know, once he thought that there was a very real chance his 800,000 would be broken.
And he didn't want to submit it because he knew it was a fucking fraudulent
tape. Right. Like, he only did it because he needed to maintain number one. And another thing that I thought was extremely interesting that is not mentioned at the end of the documentary, where, you know, the film concludes with Steve Wiebe breaking the taped score as well. And I was watching just a quick clip on YouTube about the current Donkey Kong champion, who is neither Steve Wiebe nor Billy Mitchell. It's this young guy named Wes Copeland. And they showed in that clip the previous all-time benchmarks, and it got to this score that I recognized, 1,049,000 points by Steve Wiebe on August 3rd, 2006. Also on August 3rd, 2006, Billy Mitchell submitted a tape for 1,050,000 points.
I love him.
Isn't that incredible? Did you know that? Isn't that amazing?
No.
The same day he submitted a tape with 1,000 points higher.
He is so fucking great. I love him that much more. Yeah, I bet he has a stack of VHS tapes.
Right.
Like, whatever, just numbers of whatever the bare minimum he needs.
You probably, you say that as kind of a joke, but I think you might be dead right at a certain point.
Oh, I'm not joking. I'm not joking at all.
Like, oh, okay. What do you get? 1,049 easily.
Like, you know, The Twin Galaxies headquarters, I think we have to infer, would be like semi-homeless Walter Day's fucking house. I wouldn't want to be recognized at anything in that shithole.
Right. Yeah, I think that is one of the more interesting scenes of the whole movie, when we get the look inside Walter outside of the video game realm, where he is, it does seem like, borderline homeless and just kind of like hanging out in his car playing guitar all day.
Drifter.
Yeah. Like, is that his home, or is that just a barn that he found?
What's that?
Is that his home, or is that just a barn that he found?
I don't know.
He's just like squatting.
I mean, his music is very complex. It's that...
A lot of layers. He's like, all the music I write has a lot of guitar layers and vocal layers, which would be great if he wasn't a one-man band.
Well, I think that's... he has the same amount of friends as Billy Mitchell.
Yeah. Well,
bandmates.
Yeah, both. At this tournament in Hollywood, again, I was positive it was going to be Steve finally is able to...
Yeah, the showdown.
Right. We're going to get the showdown. Steve's going to win. It's going to be great times. As it turns out...
And I wanted this. Not only did I want the showdown, you know, for the resolution of the movie, I wanted Billy Mitchell to kick fucking Steve Wiebe's ass.
That would have been an amazing twist if he comes in and Steve Wiebe breaks the record, and then Billy Mitchell in person puts like $1.5 million up or something.
Yeah, no, Billy Mitchell like looks over at his chick, like takes off fucking rings and fucking Rolex and says, "Hold this, bitch." Fucking schools Steve Wiebe. He's like, "Peace, deuces."
Just bathes himself in hot sauce on his way out.
Yeah, I mean, you know, or actually, or like Grey Muta, like sprays hot sauce mist in Steve Wiebe's, or Steve Wiebe's eyes. Says, yeah, don't fuck with me. This is my score, my town.
Yeah, that would be a diabolical superpower. Like people, hot sauce is not fun to get anywhere other than your mouth.
No, you put some hot sauce on something and accidentally pee without washing your hands.
Bad times.
You'll know it. Like, oh man, do I have chlamydia? Nope. Ricky's hot sauce.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, though, Billy, not interested in coming to participate, playing any Donkey Kong, or we don't see him even playing any video games, probably because his wife is around, and that would mean she would have to watch him play video games for the first time in her life.
She's not down with that.
Right. she had no idea who she was getting mailed to.
She did not see the return address on that money order.
Yeah, even after another 3 days, I was of playing Donkey Kong seemingly 12 hours a day. Once again,
Steve Wiebe did spend one day at the beach with his family.
Oh, that's true. Well, I figured that was after. I thought that would be interspliced to make it look better.
It could have been after. You're probably right. But I like to think that he did it during to show that he's a fucking human being and a decent father.
That was another thought I had of like the wife has those kids for 2 days straight. Like, what on earth do you do with two kids in a random hotel room with a bunch of nerds hanging out for 2 days?
Oh,
in Florida?
Robert Mizrak would be more than happy to watch them.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, man. But down in Hollywood,
would not suggest that she does that.
No, no one would.
I don't even feel
comfortable with him around that cat, man.
Oh, ooh, oh God! Watch the documentary "Wrestling with Shadows" and see what Stu Hart does with cats.
I will not do that just based on the way you framed that sentence.
Okay, well, I'm sure Robert Mizrak does something similar.
All right. Well, after three, maybe a day was spent at the beach, maybe not. Three more days in Florida. Steve still does not have the high score, and I was shocked that we were at like the hour and 19-minute mark with this guy still not being the world record holder. However, it is thankfully at the end of the movie for everyone but Johnny Fairplay revealed that Steve did break another million point game.
No, I saw that. I did find that out. Like my copy had like it ends right after they show the epilogue.
No, excuse me. I meant everyone but you was thankful that this happened.
Oh, okay. I thought you said didn't see it. But, no. But as I said, I did see an early cut that did not like it like I'm probably missing like, you know, 3 minutes of footage. It was just an early cut of the film.
Yeah, no. Well, Steve Wiebe is by the end of this movie going to be the high scorer both in live and taped Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong Jr.
And Donkey Kong Jr. And they don't mention the fact that Billy Mitchell then put out that tape for $1,050,000 like a couple hours later.
As much as that makes the movie awesome for me, I think it ruins it for everyone else watching that.
Right. It's like hours later, Billy Mitchell sent in another tape and still has the world record. That's not as much fun.
That's so crazy. Yeah. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah. Well, fair play. Let's talk about just bigger picture Billy Mitchell and just the King of Kong in general quickly, because my big takeaway from this movie was that Billy, as much as I loved him as just a movie villain in the abstract, it really felt, I couldn't help but feel like this guy would still to this day be the most renowned arcade gamer of all time by a wide margin had he not just let his ego get in the way and feel the need to outdo whatever challenger came along 25 years ago. And now, saying this in February 2018, I feel like his legacy has irreversibly been tainted. Does that sound about right to you?
I don't think so, because I appreciate him that much more that he's just that devilish. So I mean, like if you watch King of Kong and don't think he's a scumbag, then you're wrong or you're me. So I don't feel that you could taint the reputation with fake scores.
No, I don't mean that Billy Mitchell, like the character. Maybe I'm misunderstanding what you're saying. Like, I'm not trying to take away his previous, like his 1982 records or the Perfect Pac-Man or anything like that. I just mean this is a guy who could have easily ridden off into the hot sauce sunset as an all-time Mount Rushmore video game player, but his ego essentially forced him to go out of his way to, as a on a personal level, like within the
and make fraudulent tapes.
Right,
I think it adds to the legacy.
It adds to the King of Kong legacy for sure, and I wish they had included that.
I understand where you're going with it, but I disagree. I think if he didn't do that, I would be let down.
I guess maybe what you're saying is right, is that in order to get to the Billy Mitchell level in the first place, you need to be the kind of person that would do this.
Yeah, I mean, like you know, should he be on the Mount Rushmore because you know, with fraudulent scores? No, is he still and even more so a top four video gamer because of all his disreputable things? Yes.
I feel like you're the perfect person to have on here for this kind of conversation where there's a lot of nuance going on.
Well, they talk about the Survivor Mount Rushmore. I'm the guy that started the concept of that.
I know, that story.
Me talking to Gordon Holmes at the 10th anniversary party.
Yeah, he told that story on this very podcast.
Okay, so it was because I don't get a lot of credit for it because they're just like, oh, I mean, I guess that was Gordon Holmes and Jeff Probst. No, that was fucking me, and I should fucking be on it.
Well, yeah, hey, you're in the Survivor Hall of Fame now. Long overdue, by the way.
Oh, well, they have fucking juries or something in the fucking Hall of Fame now. So, I mean, what the fuck?
it's like
a wrestling belt. I don't care.
Well, at least I was very happy to see you get in because I do think that there is something to that. But fair play. This record did not stand long, obviously. It lasted about a few hours for Steve Wiebe. Now I'm saying it like non-ironically because I'm just getting to that point.
Which makes it that much more ironical.
Billy, it seems like, submitted a tape that was recognized up until recently that overtook Steve Wiebe's record at the end of this of the film. But I've been looking into the current records, and when I first watched this movie back in like 2012, 2013, or whenever you Fairplay recommended it, the number one guy at that point, this guy, this plastic surgeon from New York City, had come basically out of nowhere and overtaken both Billy Mitchell and Steve Wiebe, this guy named Hank Chen. And now, I alluded to this video earlier, I watched this video about this guy Wes Copeland, who appears to be in his 20s or early 30s. He looks very young. He put up 1.2 million points. Like, the Steve Wiebe and Billy Mitchell scores are barely cracking a million. He's doing like way, way more than that. And it seems like Donkey Kong, the scene is still alive and well with a new guy kind of at the top there. Have you, is there any other guy, like current Donkey Kong situation that you're aware of or any other kind of competitive video game endeavors that are interesting going on right now?
No. God, no.
I don't know, because I'm genuinely interested in watching this thing.
Sure, following this stuff. As I said, I'm going to watch the snake one. I'm excited about that. So, but I would like to think that there's no others currently going on, and this is it. And the madness ends with this movie and with us finishing discussing it now, and that's it. No more.
Okay, well, for the final question.
I don't want anyone else to debate it after us.
Okay, I think we're pretty safe on that. We might be the first King of Kong cast, at least in many years. Fair play.
Yes.
As a closing piece to this, evaluate the movie King of Kong on a scale of 1 to 10, and in this case, I'm going to have you evaluate it on a scale of 1 to 10 blow-dried power mullets.
Ooh, wow. 11. One
11.
Louder.
I love it.
It is my favorite documentary of all time.
It's certainly very high on the list for me. I have virtually no faults with this movie. It's just because I want to. I don't want to give a perfect 10 on my very first documentary podcast.
Then you should have started with a different fucking movie.
Well, this is the thing. This is. I want to leave room for perfection down the line. I'm hoping that
I always thought 5 stars was the most you could get in wrestling, and then we had Kenny Omega and Okada with the 6 stars. I say give this the perfect 10, and if you have to break out the 11, it's there.
Okay, you know what? That is a compelling argument. The King of Kong, there is a reason that I picked this movie to do first. This is, if not my favorite documentary of all time, very, very near the top of the list. Fairplay, you've talked me into it. 10 out of 10 blow-dried power mullets. Johnny Fairplay, thank you so much for coming on. What would you like to plug at this time?
Go to johnnyfairplay.com, buy a t-shirt. If you do, I give you a call and thank you, which is kind of awesome, I think. And also go to survivalthefairest.com and listen to my podcast. And on the podcast, you'll hear me mention my t-shirts that you can get at johnnyfairplay.com.
All right. on Twitter at Johnny Fairplay.
Yes, at Johnny Fairplay on Twitter. No H in Johnny. That's JONNYFAIRPLAY. Oh, and if you have a jean jacket and you need a cool pin for it, go to fairplaypins.com, PINS.
Fairplaypins.com. Well, thank you so much once again for coming on. I had such a great time.
Thank you. This is awesome. I'm like the rest of my day. I'm like gonna punch a wall. I'm so excited. I am pumped. I am amped, and I'm ready to give a smile.
Awesome. I mean, I really can't thank you enough for giving us so much time today, and for just recommending this movie in the first place. I'm sure it would have taken me a long, long time to ever come around to it if I ever eventually did. So I'm very glad that you put that out there into the ether for me and for everyone else. And I'm hoping that this podcast has done its role in getting some more King of Kong fans out there. Until next time, I am at Colin Stone on Twitter. I'm sure Dom and I will be back with plenty more podcasting coming very soon. Thank you guys very much for listening this far. We will talk to you soon. Take care, everybody.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows Captain Lad. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates at the long stem road.